Okay, so basically what I would like to speak about today is leadership, parenting, the application of power, and of course, tikkun olam, fixing the world. Now all of these things come together actually in a very interesting way as part of the story in Parshat Toldot. So Parshat Toldot is Toldot Yitzchak, the history of Isaac. And this whole parsha is basically about this very enigmatic character. Toward the end of the parsha, till we get to the famous story of giving over the blessings, Yitzchak is feeling old. He wants to give the blessings to his sons. He calls in Esav, tells him to go get some food, and then he'll come and bless him. In the meantime, Rivka does not like what she hears and says, Yaakov has to get the blessings, not Esav. And so she sends him in with some hairy gloves and with some good food. Basically, Yaakov steals the blessings. At the end of the story, Esav comes in and Yitzchak realizes he gave the blessings to the wrong person, quote unquote. And then he realizes that really Yaakov is the right person, and he confirms that those blessings went to Yaakov and they stay with Yaakov. Very strange story, but there's something very interesting to be understood from it, and which we'll try to explain the whole story of Isaac. So the story of the blessings begins in chapter 27, and it says, "Vayhi ki zaken Yitzchak v'tichena einav miraot." So Isaac was old, and his eyes became weak, such that he could not see. He basically became blind. Vayikra et Esav, and he called Esav his son, and he told him, I'm getting old, and I don't know when I'm going to die, so go and take your weaponry and go out to the field and trap me some venison and make me some good food that I like, and I will give you the blessings before I die. Now, I remember once you told me that, you know, once there was a shiur that spent a whole hour just on one verse. So now we're going to spend a whole shiur on one word. And the one word is v'tichena. He became blind, or his eyes became weakened, but he became blind. And so now everybody wants to know, why did Isaac become blind? How did he come blind? He's the father of the nation, he's a great tzaddik, and it's not really that he was so old, because he lived for another like 50, 60 years, meaning one third of his life he was blind. So he may have felt old and ready to die, but he wasn't ready to go anywhere. And it's not like Yaakov, who actually, it also says his eyes became weak when he was on his deathbed, but when his grandsons came to be blessed, he saw them, he knew who they were. So this blindness is something very unnatural. And all the commentators discuss it, and there's many, many, many midrashim to explain how is it that Yaakov became blind. And this blindness actually will tell us a lot about Yaakov's character and really about the whole story about this transition from Abraham, Isaac to Jacob. So now Rashi brings on this one word. He chooses to explain it via three midrashim. Very strange. He brings three midrashim to explain this one word. Now, there are many midrashim. Why these three? Why three at all? So, the first midrash, he says, Be'ashnan shel elu. So, what he's referring to is a midrash. It's quoted in a number of places in the Psikta Rabbati I have on the source sheet. It says that Esav sinned against his father. He went and married idol-worshipping women, and these women burned ketoret. They burned incense to their idols. And so when Yitzchak smelled this, his eyes became weak, and he became blinded basically from the incense of these idol-worshipping daughter-in-laws. Okay, so this is interesting, but you know, you also have to ask the question, I mean, if this smoke from their incense was so blinding, why didn't everybody else get blinded? And the Midrashim deal with it, but it already gives you a hint that perhaps we're not really dealing with physical blindness, but there's something more psychological, spiritual to it. Now, the second Midrash that Rashi brings, and he says, Davar Acher, could be another thing. So it says, the time that he became blinded was at the Akedah, at the binding of Isaac, when his father came to sacrifice him on the altar in Har Moriah. So when he looked up to the heavens, he saw the angels crying, and their tears came down and got into his eyes, and this weakened his eyes to the point that he became blind. Very interesting. But, you know, now this is also another completely different idea, that the angels' tears blinded him. What does that really mean? And finally, there's the third Midrash that says, Devar Acher, Kedei She'itol Yaakov Et HaBrachot. So now this is a Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah, the third Midrash that Rashi brings. And it says that Rabbi Chanina bar Papa quoted a verse in Tehillim, Rabot asita ata Hashem Elohei niflotecha machshvotecha eleinu. Amar Rabbi Chanina, kol pu'ulot machshvot shav pa'alta aleinu bishvileinu. So Rabbi Chanina quotes this verse in Tehillim that says, great are all the things that you, God, did for us. All these wonders and all this great thought that you put into us. You did everything just for us, the Jewish people. And so now it says, and why did Yitzchak become blind? In order that he wouldn't see when Yaakov came to take the brachot, because Yaakov needed to have the brachot, and God knew that. And so God twisted all of nature, made Yitzchak blind in order that the Jewish people would have Yaakov as their forefather, and we could continue in the mission statement of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now, this is also very interesting and also very different. So now you have to ask yourself, these are three very, very different Midrashim. Now, I read an article that tried to explain why is Rashi bringing these three. So he said, well, you know, each one of them has some positive value and some negative value. They don't, each one on its own doesn't really answer the question. And so all three together, more or less, bring an answer. What I want to say is that all three of them are coming to tell a story. All three of them are needed to explain what's going on with these blessings, what's going on with this passing on of the mission. Let there be no doubt that what we're talking about is not a nice blessing like, oh, you should have a nice life. Oh, you should be wealthy, you should marry, you should be healthy, whatever nice blessings. This isn't a nice time to give some nice blessings. What's going on here, the Ramban says, is that he's passing on the baton. He's passing on the mission statement. Hayabadato levarech otoshi yizkehu birkat Avraham v'linchol et ha'aretz. He is now going to take on the blessing of Abraham of inheriting the land. V'liyot hu bal habrit le'elohim. And he will be the master of the covenant, as it were. He is going to be that next stage in being responsible for the Abrahamic mission of fixing the world. That's what Yitzchak wants to pass on now. And so what I want to say is that each and every one of these three Midrashim is coming to teach us where Yitzchak is at and how that fits in with Esav versus Yaakov and God, and how all these players are coming together at this pivotal moment in Jewish history. Now, to understand, you have to understand why is it in the first place that Yaakov wanted Esav to take on this mission and not Yaakov? I mean, through the stories, we see clearly Yaakov is, you know, this Ish O'alim. He's this guy who is studious and he's a good person and he's got all these great midot tovot, and he really should be the chosen one. But he's not. And Esav, he's always running around, and he's the man, he's an ish tzayit, he's a trapper, he's a hunter, he's out in the fields. What does Yaakov see in him to take over this holy moral mission? So Rav Kook explains that it's Dafka, specifically Esav, that Yitzchak wants, because of this difference in character that I just explained. Rav Kook explains that Yaakov is an ish ohalim. He's a man of the tent. And in order to go out into the world and fix the world, you're going to need to apply power. You're going to need to go out into the field. You're going to need to get your hands dirty. You're going to need to go and do all kinds of things that somebody sitting in yeshiva isn't necessarily going to be ready to do. And so Yitzchak sees in Esav, explains Rav Kook, this individual who has the power to go out and change the world, physically. And so that's why he wants him to do this. Now, on the second page of the source sheet, so I bring Yoram Chazoni. Yoram Chazoni wrote a book called The Dawn, which is a explanation of Megillat Esther and how the whole story of Esther is about man taking responsibility for himself to fix the world, and that takes power. Explains as follows. We want to have a moral world. We want to have a world where everybody gets along in harmony. But that's not so simple. Morality requires that man have power in order to pursue right. This is true on the individual level, in which one can only give to others when one has what to give. But it's even more true when one considers moralities of scale, which require vast amounts of political power, economic power, military power. Without power, there's no police force capable of defending the innocent, no court capable of doing justice, no army capable of wresting peace from the aggressor. Morality requires power. And morality on a vast scale requires power on a vast scale. So now this is why Yaakov wants Esav. He wants to bring morality to the world, and he knows he's going to need power to get it done. And this explains our first midrash. The first midrash that Rashi brought said that the smoke from the incense that was being burnt to idol worshiping bothered Yitzchak to the point that he became blind. But if we read the midrash again, it says halach v'nasa avodot kochavim. V'hayu ma'ashnot ketor lifnei avodat kochavim, v'yitzchak meriach v'kiheo einav. It says, after they were burning this incense, Yaakov smelled it, and his eyes became weak. It should have said, Yaakov saw it. It got into his eyes. He smelled it. He smelled something stinky. He smelled the stench of politics. He smelled the stench of getting involved in the world and applying force to get things done. What Yitzchak's blindness was not that he became blind from the smoke of the Avodah Zarah. He became blind to the smoke. He turned a blind eye. He knows that things are going to have to get done, and sometimes it's not so pretty. And so he was blind to what his son was doing, and by marrying these Avodah Zarah women. And this is exactly what Shlomo HaMelech did. In order to strengthen his kingdom, and in order to strengthen all of his connections with all the peoples around him, he married women. And he had a whole kingdom of women that were idol worshippers. Exactly, a harem. And so there is precedence in Esav doing this. Basically, Yitzchak understood that it takes politics. And now I quote for you Yoram Chazoni again. He says politics is dirty. That is, people who are not known to lie, cheat, defraud, deceive, break agreements, blackmail, and he goes on and on, suddenly find themselves doing so and more when political power is at stake. Politics is dirty because it is in fact impure. But this does not make it immoral. And that's a very heavy statement.
Yep.
So now, the fact is that there's precedence for this, or I should say support for this, in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Gedola aveira lishma, zot omeret l'shem mitzvah, mi mitzvah shelo lishma. The Gemara says there's a concept called aveira lishma, to sin for the sake of God. Okay? So what this concept is, it's a very delicate concept, but what it's saying is that there are times and there are places where one has to violate the very law of God in order to fulfill the will of God. It's called aveira lishma. The classic example of that is Esther, who went and slept with Ahasuerus, right, in order to save all the Jewish people. Okay? She committed a sin in order for the greater good of the Jewish people. Now, there are poskim like the Noda B'Yehuda who says that this aveira lishma idea can only apply on the national level. People, individuals can't go around doing this. But in any case, there is this idea that politics is dirty, but it's not immoral. There is a morality in the sense of fulfilling God's will and the greater good that sometimes forces us to take ways that are not so pretty. And that's why Yitzchak accepted what Esav was doing and blinded his eyes to it. That's stage number one. But then we get to the next midrash. And the next midrash was that the tears of the angels fell in Yitzchak's eyes and blinded him. So, but what is the meaning of these tears? So there's a midrash on the Akedah itself, which is a parallel to the same midrash we read about the blindness of Yitzchak's eyes, and it explains there, it says, the quotes, Yeshayahu says, Hen er elam tza'aku chutza. The angels, when they saw that Yitzchak was being brought on the altar, they screamed the word chutza. So now the midrash says, what is this chutza? Mau chutza. Rabbi Azaria amar chutza chitza hu breye birye lemichas yat barye brey. And so in Hebrew it's translated klomar shehu davar chitzoni biyoto davar zar v'rachok min hasechel ha'inyan hazeh she'ha'av yishchot et bano. So now what this is saying is that the angels cried foul. They cried unnatural. They said, this is not the way of the world. This is completely foreign that a father is going to come and sacrifice his child. So that's what these angels were crying about. This is not the right way. Okay? And those tears of this unnatural event that a father comes to sacrifice his son were seared into Yitzchak's eyes, and they, as it were, blinded him. He saw the world through these tears. He saw the world through this idea of a man coming to sacrifice his own son, and he said, I can never do that. And so there, Rav Ezra Bick, who teaches at Yeshiva and Har Etzion, he wrote an article called The Blindness of Isaac. So he brings this very midrash, and he says, the angel's tears express the objective tragedy of the Akedah. The world, in its spiritual foundations, weep at the sight of a father sacrificing his son. Yitzchak felt the tears of the angels, the tragedy and sadness of existence in a world where such an act is possible. Is it any wonder Yitzchak was unable to reject a son, even Esav? So Yitzchak's whole world outlook was molded by this event, and he learned that a father does not reject his son. He does not let him go. And even though Esav was this unsavory character, let us say, Yitzchak held out hope that he would become good, that he would do well. And that's exactly what Rav Kook explains. Rav Kook explains the verse, V'yehav Yitzchak et Esav, ki tzayid b'fi v'rivka ohevet et Yaakov. So it says, Yitzchak loved Esav, and Rivka loved Yaakov. So Rav Kook notices something very interesting in the verse that you don't see in English. Here we said, Yitzchak loved him, Ahava loved him, Rivka loved Yaakov. But in the Hebrew it says, V'yehav, which really has a tense of in the future, and in grammatically in the Torah it means in the past, whereas Rivka it says ohevet, she loves him now. And so Rav Kook explains that Yitzchak loved Esav because he held out hope for him in the future. V'yehav, he will love him, he said. And that's reflected on the past, because he's saying that this love of in the future has given him a way to hold out hope in the past, meaning in what Esav has done in the past. He's willing to overlook it because of the hope that he holds out for Esav in the future. So now these two midrashim come to explain where Yitzchak is at, that he's coming now to pass the baton of the Abrahamic mission to Esav. A, he understands that you need to have power to get the mission done, and Esav has it. B, even though Esav is an unsavory character, he holds out all hope for him because he is his son, and he believes that he will reform and actually be able to use that power for the good of the mission. But there's a limit. There's a limit. There's a limit to how much power you can apply in order to get things done. There's a limit to how much sin you can do in order to get God's will done. Not everything, we're not, like Machiavelli said, that the ends justify the means. There are certain means which are unjustifiable. There is a limit to this application of Aveira Lishma. And there's a limit to how much hope we are going to hold out for any individual. And so God comes with the third midrash that we said, that God made Yitzhak physically blind. The other two midrashim, we looked at Yitzhak as being more sort of psychologically blind. But here, God says, I'm going to blind Yitzhak in order that he gives the blessings to Yaakov. And so this third midrash is coming to put things into perspective now in the global sense, in God's eyes, we need Yaakov to be blessed. So now Rav Kook explains that what happened in this whole story that now Yaakov has to have the blessings. You see, we said before that Yaakov doesn't have the power to get things done. He's a man of the tent. He sits in yeshiva and learns Torah all day. How is he going to get anything done? So Rav Kook explains, you misunderstood the application of power versus the learning of Torah and learning God's ways. You see, you need both of them. You need both of them. And Esav only had this power, and it was in his nature to use force for everything. He was a hunter. Nothing stood in the way of his desires. Okay? And so he could not really bring forth God's will in the world. You need to have somebody who can apply judicious thinking and apply the force judiciously. You need somebody who is learned. You need somebody who sits in yeshiva. You need somebody who learns Torah. You need somebody who can take the hands of Esav and use it when it's necessary, and not use it when it's not necessary. And Rav Kook sees the symbol that when Esav and Yaakov were born, so Esav came out first, and Yaakov was holding on to his heel. So now, Rav Kook explains that the heel is like the nature of the man. He had the power of Esav, this power of force, of using force, in his nature. Yaakov was holding on to that heel. Yaakov, through his own desire, could take hold of that power or let go of the power. It wasn't internal to him. He was a man of integrity. But if need be, he could take hold of that power and apply it. That's what you need to get God's will done. And so you need to be able to use the power. It says Rav Kook, Yishtamesh bezeh lifamim Yaakov al pi sichlo. He would use the power according to his better judgment, not because it was in his nature. And so what happened was, Rivka told Yaakov, go in to Yitzchak to get the blessings, but first dress up in the external clothing of your brother Esav. Put on the hairy gloves, okay? Put on the hands of Esav, okay? The hands that can do power. But that's really him listening to his mother. When does Yaakov really come forth and use the power of Esav? When Yitzhak asks him, he says, Mi ata? He goes, who are you? Right? He said, the Hakol kol Yaakov yadayim yadei Esav. The voice is the voice of Jacob. The hands, I feel, are the hands of Esav. So who are you? And what does Yaakov answer? He says, Anochi Esav bechorcha. Ani I am Esau, your firstborn. And that's a stunning, blatant lie. But, says Rav Kook, it's not a lie. Because for the person who understands this story, Yaakov is saying is, I am now taking on the power of Esav. And what's that power? The ability to apply dirty politics. The ability, for the sake of morality, to lie and do whatever else is necessary to get God's will done. So now Yaakov is demonstrating that he understands that at this critical juncture in history, he is coming and stepping forth and saying, I understand what it takes to fix the world. I understand that sometimes it's going to get dirty, and I'm willing to dirty my hands. I have the hands of Esav. I am Esav. And so that's why, says Rav Kook, he says, V'acharechen, kishenodalo, v'ra'a sheyesh b'Yaakov gamkein hachana zu shel hatokef, v'koach ha'bechora niknalo amar gam birech baruch yeh. When Esav came in and told Yitzchak, what's going on? Can you give me the blessing? And Yitzchak realized that he gave the blessing to Yaakov. He said, and this man will be blessed. I confirm now that the blessings went to Yaakov because he is the right person, because now I see that he has the power to take this mission and get it done. And so, in conclusion, we've learned an amazing story from this three Rashis. Rashi brought three Midrashim. There are many, many, many other Midrashim that tell the story in many different ways. He chose three specifically. One that teaches us that Yitzchak understood, and so should we, that it takes power to fix the world. And that Yitzchak also held out hope for his son, as we should also hold out hope for all of the Jewish people and all of the world. But yet there is a limit. And that limit we need to see, to understand that we don't just apply force and apply politics in every corner, but only judiciously, according to our understanding of the Torah and God's will. And through that, we bring the Tikkun Olam that was the mission of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob with the coming of the Mashiach. B'mehera v'yameinu.